Today is Wednesday, January 7th, 2025, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. Trump and Miller's Iron Law of Imperialist Barbarism by Andre Damon. In the aftermath of Saturday's U.S. attack on Venezuela and the kidnapping of President Nicolas Maduro, the Trump administration has unleashed a torrent of threats against countries around the world, targeting Cuba, Colombia, Iran, China, Russia, and even the European Union. Following Maduro's abduction on Saturday, the Trump administration presented a series of demands to Venezuela's interim president, Delcy Rodriguez, aimed at subordinating the country's foreign and economic policy to U.S. geopolitical and corporate interests. U.S. officials told Rodriguez that Caracas must first kick out China, Russia, Iran, and Cuba, and sever economic ties, according to ABC News, and then, quote, agree to partner exclusively with the U.S. on oil production and favor America when selling heavy crude. End quote. This is, in essence, the transformation of Venezuela into a colonial protectorate of the U.S. American imperialism intends to steal Venezuela's oil and reverse the nationalization of the oil companies, which is directed not only against Venezuela itself, but also Russia and China. Trump issued a direct threat to Rodriguez, stating that if she, quote, doesn't do what's right, she's going to pay a very big price, probably bigger than Maduro, end quote. Over the weekend, Trump also renewed his declared intent to annex Greenland, an overseas territory of EU and NATO member Denmark, through military force. In a CNN interview Monday, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller laid out the criminal character of the assault on Venezuela and American imperialism as a whole. When asked what Trump meant when he said the U.S. would run Venezuela, Miller declared, "We live in a world that is governed by strength, that is governed by force, that is governed by power. These are the iron laws of the world that have existed since the beginning of time." Miller dismissed international law as international niceties, and declared flatly, "The United States of America is running Venezuela. We are in charge because we have the United States military stationed outside the country. We set the terms and conditions. We have a complete embargo on all of their oil and their ability to do commerce." End quote. Miller made clear that this iron law applies not just to the former colonies, but the territories of the European power themselves. When asked about Greenland, Miller declared that, quote, "Greenland should be part of the United States," and refused to rule out the use of military force. "Nobody's going to fight the United States military over the future of Greenland," he sneered. This is the language of the Nazis, drawn from Hitler's Mein Kampf, and its talk of iron laws of nature in relation to racist and racial state conflict. Beyond the specific ideological influences of Miller's statements, however, he's expressing what is in fact the essential character of imperialist policy. Lenin, in his 1916 work, Imperialism, the Highest Stage of Capitalism, in analyzing the competition between different banks and corporate conglomerates, explained that influence and power is divided, quote, in proportion to capital, in proportion to strength, because there cannot be any other method of division under commodity production and capitalism, end quote. Polemicizing against those, including Karl Kautsky, who claimed that capitalism was capable of peaceful development, he wrote, quote, monopolies, oligarchy, the striving for domination and not for freedom, the exploitation of an increasing number of small or weak nations by a handful of the richest or most powerful nations, all these have given birth to those distinctive characteristics of imperialism, which compel us to define it as parasitic or decaying capitalism. End quote. In the aftermath of World War II, under conditions of immense social upheaval and enormous popular outrage over the crimes of the Nazi regime, the capitalist powers outlined and expanded certain principles of international law that were supposed to regulate the relations among states. A limited number of the surviving leaders of the Nazi regime were tried for crimes against peace, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. In its ruling, the International Tribunal declared a war of aggression to be the supreme international crime. As a matter of fact, the United States never considered itself seriously bound by these principles. Within 5 years of the Nuremberg verdicts, it launched the Korean War. Then came the Vietnam War, the various operations in Iran, Indonesia, the Congo, Guatemala, and Chile, and the backing of death squads across Latin America. But U.S. imperialism traditionally cloaked its aggression in the language of freedom and democracy. As Trotsky remarked ironically in the 1920s, America is always liberating somebody. That's her profession. End quote. Wilson's 14 points, Roosevelt's 4 freedoms, Carter's human rights, reflect an effort to uphold the pretense that American policy was not governed by predatory interest. In asserting the iron law that might makes right, Trump is not inventing a new doctrine, but stripping away the tattered remains of the democratic pretext that once accompanied American aggression. He's not inventing something new, and Trump is building on decades of escalating criminality that followed the dissolution of the Soviet Union. But there is now a qualitative development. This transformation is rooted in the deepening crisis of American capitalism. The post-World War II framework of international institutions and legal norms served for a time to regulate inter-imperialist tensions and stabilized global capitalism under U.S. leadership. Now, that framework has collapsed. The global dominance of the dollar is under growing threat. U.S. debt has soared to unprecedented levels. Any pretense that American policy is determined by anything but naked imperialist interest is being cast aside. The frankness with which the Trump administration now declares its criminal aims expresses the predatory aims of the ruling class itself. The Washington Post, owned by the world's second richest man, Jeff Bezos, published an editorial Monday under the headline, "Maduro's Arrest Exposes Legal Fictions," with the subtitle, "The Administration Concocts a Legal Rationale for a Foreign Policy Objective. That's okay." End quote. The Post concludes with a statement that, quote, "International law is always a flimsy constraint on state behavior, and the United States needs other tools to defend itself and its friends." End quote. The Wall Street Journal dismissed objections to the kidnapping of Maduro as the international law illusion, declaring that, quote, "The demonstration of U.S. nerve and military prowess will do more than 1,000 U.N. resolutions to protect the free world." End quote. These editorials constitute open admission that what the United States carried out was a crime, coupled with the declaration that American military power places it above the law. Trump is a representative of a criminal oligarchy that has amassed its wealth through fraud, speculation, and plunder. As the WSWS wrote in its first statement on the invasion of Venezuela, quote, "He is the chosen instrument of the American ruling class, a gangster vomited up by the oligarchy to enforce policies that can no longer be pursued through democratic or legal means." End quote. What this demonstrates is the delusional character of all reformist nostrums. This is a ruling class carrying out a project of global war and dictatorship. The same illegality, the same ruthlessness, the same criminality that is expressed in the kidnapping of Maduro is expressed in the assault on democratic rights at home, the mass deportations, the attacks on the press, the purging of the civil service, the deployment of the military against the population. These are two sides of the same war, a war waged by the oligarchy against the working class. But the iron law of imperialist barbarism will be confronted with the iron law of the class struggle. Trump and Miller operate as if they can do anything, as if there's no consequences for their actions. This may be true in relation to their factional opponents within the ruling class, who have capitulated to every outrage. But it is not true in relation to the working class. The war on Venezuela is deeply unpopular. Polls show overwhelming opposition among the American population. The working class in the United States and internationally must draw the necessary conclusions. The oligarchy has declared war on the world and on the working class. The International Committee of the Fourth International and the Socialist Equality Party call on workers, students, and youth to take up the fight against imperialism, against the capitalist system that produces it, and for the socialist reorganization of society. Trump freezes $10 billion in aid to working class families as deportation raids expand, by Jacob Cross. The Trump administration has announced plans to withhold more than $10 billion in federal aid for low-income families in five states governed by Democrats: California, Minnesota, Illinois, Colorado, and New York. The sweeping funding freeze, first reported by the New York Post on Monday and confirmed by multiple outlets Tuesday, targets core social assistance programs that support food, housing, childcare, and basic income for working-class families. Roughly $7 billion of the funding freeze targets the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF program, a primary source of assistance for food, housing, home energy, and childcare for impoverished and working-class families. In some states, TANF also provides job training and limited access to higher education. An estimated 1 million families received TANF assistance in 2023. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, CBPP, reported in October 2025 that only 21 out of every 100 families with children living in poverty nationwide received TANF cash assistance that year, highlighting the already devastated conditions of the program before Trump's latest cuts. The hollowing out of TANF has been driven by bipartisan policy. When the program was created in 1996, following the Clinton administration's welfare reform, 68 out of every 100 families in poverty received assistance. By 2021, that figure had fallen to 19 out of 100. Had coverage remained at its original level, an additional 2.4 million families would have received support in 2021 alone. A 2022 National Bureau of Economic Research study found that every $1,000 in TANF support generated five times that amount in broader social benefit through increased adult earnings and improved child health, sharply reducing long-term public cost. In addition to TANF, the five targeted states are being stripped of $2.4 billion from the Child Care and Development Fund, which provides assistance to working parents who need help paying for childcare. Approximately 1.4 million children nationwide depend on federal childcare funding. Another $870 million is being blocked from social service grants that overwhelmingly benefit low-income children. None of the four states outside Minnesota have faced comparable fraud allegations. The political character of the cuts was made explicit when Trump declared on Truth Social Tuesday that California is, quote, more corrupt than Minnesota, and announced a new federal fraud investigation of the state. The retaliatory character of the funding freeze is underscored by Trump's targeting of Colorado, where there have been no allegations of large-scale fraud. 5 years after the failed January 6 coup, Trump is moving directly against working-class children in the state because Democratic Governor Jared Polis has refused to commute the sentence of Tina Peters, a former Mesa County clerk and recorder, and a loyal participant in Trump's coup attempt. Peters was convicted by a jury on multiple felony counts, including attempting to influence a public official, conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, official misconduct, violation of duty, and failure to comply with orders of the Secretary of State for her role in breaching Colorado's election system in support of Trump's effort to overturn the 2020 election. She was sentenced to 9 years in prison under state law. Trump issued a federal pardon for Peters earlier this year, but it has no legal effect on her state convictions. Polis's refusal to intervene has now been met with direct collective punishment of working-class families in Colorado through the termination of critical federal assistance programs. The announcement of the austerity measures comes as approximately 2,000 federal immigration agents are en route to or already operating in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area, carrying out mass detention operations. On Tuesday, Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, Secretary Kristi Noem appeared alongside masked and heavily armed immigration agents, accompanied by a television camera crew, while federal officers carried out home raids as part of the expanding deportation campaign. Trump and the Republican Party are justifying the funding freeze by invoking allegations of fraud, some real and many fabricated. In Minnesota, allegations that were largely investigated and prosecuted under the Biden administration have already been used as a pretext to suspend $185 million in federal funding. These cuts will impact at least 30,000 children, none of whom had any connection to the alleged misconduct. These measures form part of a broader austerity program aimed at dismantling social assistance programs that benefit workers, their families, and the poor, while freezing resources for tax breaks for the wealthy and increased interest payments to financial institutions. The Democratic Party has played a central role in preparing these attacks. For years, Democratic administrations expanded deportation infrastructure, and following Trump's failed coup, the party did everything in its power to resuscitate the Republican Party and key institutions of the capitalist state that supported the attack, including the military, police, intelligence agencies, and the Supreme Court. Even as Trump promised to rule as a dictator on day one of a second term, President Joe Biden and the Democrats insisted on the need for a, quote, strong Republican Party and ensuring a, quote, peaceful transfer of power to the second Trump presidency. Succumbing to Republican lies on Monday, Democratic Minnesota Governor Tim Walz suspended his re-election campaign, citing the fraud investigations now being exploited by the Trump administration. His capitulation has provided political cover for a campaign of racial scapegoating that portrays Somali immigrants in Minnesota as participants in a vast criminal conspiracy orchestrated in collaboration with Democratic officials. Appearing on Fox News with Jesse Waters, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem advanced this narrative without evidence. Quote, he told them to just do their job and follow orders and overlooked all these criminals, Noem claimed, accusing Walz of deliberately ignoring internal complaints. The remarks formed part of a coordinated effort to legitimize the funding freeze and the simultaneous expansion of deportation raids. Democratic officials have responded to the funding freeze by appealing to the courts. New York Governor Kathy Hochul declared the cuts vindictive and said her administration was preparing a litigation strategy. California Attorney General Rob Bonta said that the state was in a assessment period to determine whether legal action was warranted. These maneuvers offer no defense of the working class. The courts are instruments of the same capitalist state apparatus now being mobilized to enforce austerity and repression. Regardless of judicial rulings, the Trump administration acting on behalf of the financial oligarchy, will continue to impose social cuts while expanding deportation raids and police state measures. The Democratic Party, which has funded wars abroad, expanded deportation infrastructure, and presided over decades of welfare cutbacks, will not mobilize mass opposition to these policies. It serves the same corporate and financial interest as the Republicans. The only social force capable of halting the deportation rates and reversing the assault on living standards is the working class. Zelensky names military spy chief to lead office of president, by Jason Milanovsky. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky named military intelligence chief Kirilo Budanov head of the office of the president of Ukraine last Friday. Budanov is filling a powerful position that had remained vacant since November, when Zelensky's previous longtime aide, Andriy Yermak, resigned in the wake of a massive corruption scandal. The nomination of Budanov, a hardline CIA-trained militarist and supporter of bringing the NATO proxy war to Russian soil, comes at a pivotal time for the Zelensky administration. It is under immense pressure from the U.S. to come to an agreement with Moscow to end the four-year-long war that has killed hundreds of thousands on both sides. The EU, for its part, strongly opposes the Trump-backed peace plan and has been instrumental in urging Zelensky to amend the plan so as to sabotage it entirely and continue the carnage in order to funnel money into its domestic defense industries. Last Wednesday, Zelensky stated that an agreement to end the war was 90% ready. As the WSWS has explained, the Trump-backed plan is no way a peace plan, but rather a temporary agreement between the fascist Trump government and an oligarchic Putin regime to end the war while maximizing U.S. profits and control in the region at the expense of its EU rivals. On Friday, Zelensky officially announced the nomination of Budanov on Telegram, stating, "I had a meeting with Kirilov Budanov and offered him the role of the head of the office of the president of Ukraine. At this time, Ukraine needs greater focus on security issues, the development of the defense and security forces of Ukraine, as well as on the diplomatic track of negotiation, and the office of the president will primarily serve the fulfillment of these tasks of our state." End quote. With a background serving in Ukraine's special forces during the post-2014 civil war in the Donbas region, Budanov was first named the head of Ukraine's Defense Intelligence, HUR, in 2020, and reportedly moved rapidly to prepare the country for a full-scale war with Russia and modernize Ukraine's defense intelligence in close collaboration with the CIA. The New York Times reported in 2024 that Budanov was one of the members of the elite unit 2245 of the Ukrainian Main Intelligence Directorate, trained by the CIA. Budanov is also known to maintain direct ties with the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, the OUN, the direct descendants of Ukrainian fascist Stepan Bandera's World War II-era organization that was responsible for the murder of thousands of Jews and Poles. Just 39 years old, Budanov has personally overseen countless numbers of adventurous sabotage operations, drone strikes, and political assassinations of both Russian military and civilian figures on Russian soil. Such attacks achieved little militarily, but have successfully escalated the conflict with Moscow, while at the same time making it appear in Western media that Ukraine was somehow winning the war against Russia, despite a continued loss of Ukrainian territory and soldiers at the front. Following a Moscow court order of Budanov's arrest on terrorism charges against Russia, Budanov replied, quote, "We've been killing Russians and we will keep killing Russians anywhere on the face of this world until the complete victory of Ukraine," end quote. Budanov has repeatedly allowed the media to photograph him, sitting at his office desk in front of a map showing a carved-up Russia. As the Kiev Post bragged in May, in an article highlighting Budanov's accomplishments, thanks to Budanov, over 130 confirmed acts of sabotage have struck Russian territory from 2022 to 2025. These included railways blown up, fuel depots torched, and military hubs hit deep within the front lines. On May 3, 2023, a drone exploded over the Kremlin Senate Palace, the first such strike since World War II. In 2024 and 2025, follow-up incursions have continued, sending the clear message that any part of Russia may be attacked. Ukrainian drone attacks surged 500% in 2023 and have only increased since. In May 2025, over 700 drones were launched in a single wave, reaching multiple regions including nearly 100 near Moscow, where air defenses scrambled and airports shut down. Think tanks and analysts have tracked a sharp rise in public anxiety in the Russian capital, as air raid alerts, closed airspace, and darkened streets have become part of daily life. Despite his history of seeking to continually escalate the NATO proxy war, Budanov is reportedly one of the few figures within the Ukrainian government that has maintained communications through the war with Moscow. Over the summer, he publicly acknowledged that Ukraine could not realistically recover all of the territory it had lost during the war. Budanov, who had openly criticized the Zelensky administration's mobilization drives as a failure, told Ukrainian broadcaster Suspilny last week that Kiev needed to speak with the Kremlin. Quote, "A negotiation process is definitely needed and cannot be avoided anyway," he said. In addition to his intelligence ties to the CIA, Budanov is also reportedly close with several figures from the Trump administration. These include the United States Special Envoy for Ukraine and Russia, Keith Kellogg, and Vice President J.D. Vance. Within Ukraine, Budanov is also considered one of Zelensky's potential political rivals, should presidential elections ever take place, again in Ukraine. According to a December 2025 poll conducted by a Kiev-based think tank, Sosis Center, Budanov would finish third in the first round, behind Zelensky and former commander-in-chief Valery Zaluzhny. The poll also showed both Budanov and Zaluzhny defeating Zelensky in a potential runoff election. By appointing Budanov, Zelensky has drawn himself closer to the country's Western-backed military intelligence leadership, which has never fully supported Zelensky. Zelensky's former chief staff, Andriy Yermak, was forced to resign in November just hours after investigators from Ukraine's National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, NABU, raided Yermak's apartment as part of a $100 million scheme known as Operation Midas that rocked the crisis-ridden Zelensky regime. Yermak, Ukraine's most powerful political figure, next to only Zelensky, served as both Zelensky's top aide and lead negotiator in ongoing United States-backed plan to end the ongoing NATO-backed proxy war against Russia. Despite the raid and his resignation, Yermak has yet to be charged. Reports by Ukraine's Weekly Mirror indicate that he still speaks and meets regularly with Zelensky at his home. In addition to naming Budanov to the country's most powerful non-elected position, Zelensky also made a number of other changes within his administration. He appointed Vice Prime Minister Mykhailo Fedorov to take the position of Minister of Defense and moved former Prime Minister and current Defense Minister Denis Shmyhal to head the Ministry of Energy. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.